or do it what?
Meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is February 5th, 2015. And today we have a bunch of bills that we're going to hear from and hear about. We'll see if, as we get going, whether there are ones we want to move forward. But to begin with, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 295, which we carried over from the last meeting. So with that, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator.
Certainly. Senate Bill 295, sorry, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Senate Bill 295 requires the OEIB and Chief Education Officer to file verified statements of economic interest. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact for this bill, and we are considering the Dash 1 amendments, which add the auditor of the Metropolitan Service District to the list of persons also required to file.
Okay, with that, who do we have? Do we have a list of people? I'll just use this one. So Lindsay Capps, I think we can have you start. Randy Tucker, we'll have you come up and talk about the amendment. And in the bullpen, if we need any questions answered, we have Mr. Burnson.
Yep. Thank you. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Lindsay Capps, I'm the Chief of Staff for the Chief Education Officer Nancy Golden and the Oregon Education Investment Board. I'm here today to offer our support for Senate Bill 295. Dr. Golden believes that the role of the Chief Education Officer is only strengthened through public confidence and accountability, which is why she has voluntarily filed verified statements of economic interest, even though that's not been required under law. We think it's appropriate that both she and the board members do that as a matter of course, consistent with other state agencies. So we appreciate the consideration of this bill and strongly support it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go with both people before we have any questions. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, the regional government in the Portland metropolitan region. I know, Senator Gelser, you never saw me in the Education Committee on the other side, but I'm here all the time on this side. So far, 100%.
That's why I came over.
Yeah, there you go. We have a small amendment. Actually, we introduced a bill on the House side, but then I saw this bill pop up, and it's exactly, you know, the same subject matter. Representative Kathleen Taylor is an auditor, and she's the sponsor of a bill to add the Metro auditor to the list of public officials who have to file a statement of economic interest. Our auditor, who has just left office, noticed what she had to. She filed them the first few years she was in office, and was told she didn't have to. And it always struck her as an odd thing, so she asked me to come down and see if we could get that person added. The Metro auditor is elected by an electorate that includes 1.5 million people, the same electorate that elects the Metro Council president. Of course, the entire Metro Council files their statement of economic interest, as does our chief operating officer, and there's no reason that the Metro auditor should be excluded from that, especially given the role of an auditor in ensuring the efficient and above board operations of a government. So we would just ask that you amend the Metro auditor into the statutes and take care of that oversight.
Okay. Any questions for either of these witnesses? Hearing none. Thank you. I do have it from authority, and I won't ask the question from our Ethics Commission. They're happy to take these. They are not uptight about adding new people to the requirement, and that making it available for people is fine with them. So I wouldn't need that. Call our director of that program. With that, thank you very much. We'll close. Is there anyone else in the audience who didn't sign up or whatever that would like to speak to this issue? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 295, and we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 295. And before I do that, I had some questions from there's a lot of people interested in a number of bills that are going on in this committee, and I had some requests to say, if you pass that bill and it does this for OEIB, does that mean you're automatically going to do another bill with respect to OEIB? There is no indication between the two. This one is strictly about what it's about, and we'll have conversations about the other bills. So just to some people's concerns, that this bill is about itself, and that's why it was really easy for us to add the metro, because it's really about people we think should be having that open transparency that we have in our Ethics Commission. So with that, I would entertain a motion.
Chair Oblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments as presented.
Senator Canope moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 295 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves Senate Bill 295 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, it is approved and moved on. Thank you very much. With that, we will close our work session on Senate Bill 295. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 217. And with that, we'll have a short explanation from our administrator.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 217 repeals the statutory establishment of three strategic investment programs. It declares emergency effective July 1st, 2015. We have no revenue impact, and a fiscal statement has been issued for this bill.
And you should have copies of the fiscal statement, and it has a recommendation, right?
It does. It has a recommendation that we refer it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Even though it was in the script. So, and we've checked, and that's probably what we'll end up doing at some point. So if we move this bill today. So with that, we'll again invite Lindsay Capps and Hilda Roselli. Is Hilda? Yeah, there she is.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps, Chief of Staff, Oregon Education Investment Board. We're here today to provide some explanation for Senate Bill 217, which amends statutory authority of the Oregon Education Investment Board related to recommending strategic investments. When the legislature passed House Bill 3232 in 2013, it identified three specific areas for strategic initiatives in law. One was the Oregon Early Reading Program, the guidance and support for post-secondary aspirations, and the Connecting the World of Work. The OEIB and constituent agencies have implemented programs in these areas in the 2013-15 biennium and reported to the legislature as of January 1st on their progress. In recommending strategic initiatives for the 2015-17 biennium, consistent with our charge, we have an opportunity to broaden our work and our recommendations beyond these areas, with a specific opportunity for us to impact more students, be more aggressive in our approach to closing the achievement gap, and investing earlier in the learning continuum to make sure that those gaps do not emerge and widen. This bill does not reflect a significant shift in strategy or focus. It's really a continuation of our work and an opportunity for us to scale up programs with broader reach. We understand that there are some concerns that have been raised with regard to striking specific statutory language, notably around post-secondary aspirations. We're committed to working with the chair and the committee to harmonize the housekeeping intent of this bill with other policy considerations that are beyond the scope of OEIB's current recommendations to the legislature. So that's in essence why we're here today. Hilda can add additional comments.
For the record, my name is Hilda Roselli. I serve as the Director for College and Career Readiness at the Oregon Education Investment Board. And as Lindsay Capps has already shared with you, we see some of this as really a housekeeping for this particular bill. One of the things we thought might be helpful is to show you the relationship between what was previously named the categories in Section 1 with the kinds of strategic investments that are being recommended by the Oregon Education Investment Board for 15-17. And you can see there's a tremendous relationship. The names change a little bit. So in lieu of the Oregon Early Reading Program, you'll see recommended investments come through under something that is called a pathway to third from K to third grade reading. And these include elements such as early screening for student health and wellness. So this really picks up a much earlier age group. And, of course, improved access to child care and preschool models and support for families and students through the early learning hubs. And in lieu of the very specific name that was identified for the 2013-15 biennium of guidance and support for post-secondary aspiration programs, what is being recommended is in a little larger bucket that includes pathways to high school and post-secondary completion. And these include many strategies that are starting actually even before high school, but would include things like on-track funding for ninth grade, accelerated learning models, looking at the alignment of our standards between K-12 and post-secondary, and investments in both higher ed affordability and productivity. In addition, we have across those two pathways, we have our continued focus on investments that are really designed to say, how do we support educators in making these things happen for students? And so you'll still see that we're engaging in the very same kinds of activities that the Network for Quality of Teaching and Learning was involved in for this past biennium, or for this current biennium, and particularly looking at things such as mentoring for teachers and school leaders, school district collaboration grants, and focus on culturally responsive pedagogy and practices and English language learners. Lastly, in lieu of the 2013-15 focus on connecting to the world of work, the third pathway that the OEIB has recommended is aptly titled Connecting Education to Careers, very similar, and it does include investments in high school equivalency, the career technical formula changes, and revitalization, as well as STEM hubs and strategies. Other technical fixes that are in this bill are basically renumbering and also references to amendments that were made during the 2013 legislative session, including the OEIB sunset, the model career pathways, OEIB member being on the state board, the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning, STEM Investment Council and investment grants, and the Minority Teacher Report.
So, are there any questions for either of these?
Yes.
Senator Gelser. I had to say that a couple times, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward, and I know we talked about this a little bit. It's a challenge for me to think about it as a housekeeping bill because I recall all of the significant labor that went into putting in all of the language that we took out. And the intention behind being that prescriptive in the statute was the legislature want, and we did a lot of this work over in House Ed last session, wanted to be very clear about what OEIB was prioritizing and have a lot of accountability and clarity about large amounts of resources that were being put forward. We also were concerned about striking that balance of not having so many initiatives that you can't really make progress in any of them. So it makes me a little uncomfortable to look at this. I'm wondering what tools would the legislature have and what constraints would the OEIB have if we take out all this language and just say, go close the achievement gap?
Chair Roblin, Senator Gelser, I honor those comments and understand that perhaps characterizing it as housekeeping, given the tremendous amount of work that happened both through your leadership and other legislators' leadership, and certainly the OEIB's work to support this bill, had a very specific focus and was intended to meet the needs of students. I think we have since looked at the process of making recommendations around strategic initiatives as something that ultimately falls within the budget process and the Ways and Means process. And so I think our intent was to clarify that and allow for room for additional policy recommendations to be brought forward to the legislature. So I think we are willing to, I think, revisit our approach if it was too broad and blunt, to be a little more surgical about that, and to certainly honor and reinforce some of the policy prescriptions that are identified in the bill.
And a follow-up?
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I might look a little differently at where the purview of this lies, whether or not it's a ways and means question or a policy question. I think the issue of how much money is allocated is certainly a ways and means issue, but when we have adopted as a state a 40-40-20 goal, and our education committees and many of my colleagues are focused in work every day looking at policies that will help to reach those goals, those strategic investments are policy decisions. We're deciding what do we prioritize, early reading or later reading. You mentioned some of the things that might fit in here, formula changes, which I think there is certainly not any consensus within the legislature around the initiatives that are coming out of the OEIB at this time. So it just makes me a little uncomfortable because it seems like a free pass to ways and means with money to be allocated without any policy guidance from the policy committees at all, and I'm not sure that that's the precedent that we want to set.
Thank you. Senator Cruz.
Kind of want to follow up on Senator Gelser's point. If I'm reading correctly, what you said was we want to take away the sideboards here so that the ways and means folks can make the policy decision on where to spend the money. Okay. That's our job.
Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, it was not my intent to diminish the policy role.
Not be the intent, but what you said was we open this up and then let the ways and means folk decide where to put the money, which is programs, which is something that we spend a lot of time up here working on, and what they're not supposed to do policy down there, but to a degree, it sounds like that's what you're saying is let's let the ways and means committee make policy, and we see a fair amount of that happen on a regular basis in this building, and it's always something that's really bothered me. So,
any other questions? Thank you very much. We're going to invite Greg Burrell to come on up.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I need to take my glasses off in order to...
And make sure that you, as you start your testimony, that you identify who you are for the record.
Sure. My name is Greg Burrell, B-U-R-R-I-L-L. Chair Roblin, members of the committee. This is my first time offering testimony to the Oregon Senate Education Committee. And although I am speaking to SB 217, I want you to know that my overall focus is on putting more resources into the classroom and taking them away from what I believe to be a bloated bureaucracy. And it seems to be happening everywhere, not just in schools. I believe that it's no accident that organizations of every type are creating more supervisory positions, treating these people as vital while lowering pay and benefits for those lower in the hierarchy. The fact that teachers are indispensable and bureaucrats are not is nowhere more true than in the field of education. I want to state for the record that I'm in favor of the concept of the OEIB. Coordinating education from preschool to PhD seems like a great idea. I'm opposed in general to creating more levels of bureaucracy. And the fact is these people are all paid more than teachers, paid more than building administrators. And those are the people that make education work for children. For example, there was an event that OEA sponsored called Storm the Capitol on your opening day. And I didn't get to meet most of you because you were pretty busy. But in a meeting with Senator Dembro, he was mentioning a particular program as an example of the OEIB's good works. And one of the dozen teachers in the office said, you know what? My school is piloting that program. It costs $240,000. And I can't tell you how much more we could have done with $10,000 to leverage interest from the community and parents. So. Now, I work for the state's largest public school system, Portland Public Schools, and I've suggested things like we don't need an IT department in the central office. We need tech teachers who are qualified to handle the confidential IT needs, and we should be teaching students to run the system as part of a career technical education system. I have talked about having teachers teaching students how to run the cafeteria, teachers teaching students how to do janitorial services, and only reserve the jobs that are too dangerous or sensitive in nature for non-students. So that's an idea of the sort of thing that I would like to see. And so even though I'm here talking, speaking to a bill that changes the way money is dispersed, the most important thing I think we need to do is disperse money to schools, to teachers, to building administrators. And I hope some of you that come from rural districts will help educate me about how these ideas would affect rural school systems, because I'm not an expert yet. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness? I want to say thank you for coming the first time to testify before the Senate Education Committee. We appreciate having people who are in the field and people, citizens that are out there, to come here and express their opinions, and it does help us make decisions with respect to that. So thank you for being here, and appreciate your testimony.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 217? See no one rushing to the podium. Okay, so we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 217. I think I'm going to hold. We're going to hold 217, and I'll put it up for election as we move through a bunch of other issues we're going to talk about with OEIB. I think it will fit. It's going to go to Ways and Means. They're going to hold all these anyway in the future, until the end of the session, so there's no hurry about moving it. So this one will be waiting. We'll have some conversations amongst people to see if there's other things, and we'll give a chance if amendments are needed or if other kinds of thoughts are happening. So I appreciate that. So we will now move to the back of my agenda. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 216. And again, we have the opportunity to have Lindsay Capps and Hilda Roselli. Come on up. It's your day here at the Senate Education Committee.
Let's see if we can wear out our welcome on day one. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps, Chief of Staff, Oregon Education Investment Board. Here to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 216, which makes modifications to statutes governing the Network for Quality Teaching and Learning. In bringing this legislation forward, our intent is to further improve and strengthen programs administered through the network. And there are some additional elements as well, which we'll speak to. I just want to give a quick overview to areas where we see some additional work necessary on this legislation. And those are around two specific programs within the network. The first is the Oregon Mentoring Program, where we need to do further conversation around the standards and time requirements for new teacher mentoring. We know that among the various partners that are at the table, there's a really strong commitment to mentoring as critical for teacher success and student success, and we're very hopeful that we can reach some agreement around amendments to this bill. The second has to do with the school district collaboration grant program, which was created by Senate Bill 252 in 2011. Mm-hmm. We are recommending that this program be administered by a nonprofit organization, which Hilda will speak to a little bit more about in terms of the rationale for that. Within that specific issue, we do need to identify the appropriate mix of funds for grant recipients in terms of those funds that go toward specific program elements outlined in statute and those which are reserved for local innovation, which we see a lot of through that program. So just to frame that up for all of you, those are the two issues I think we have some additional work to do and bring back to you all. With that, I'll hand it over to Dr. Roselli.
Important issues.
They are.
Very important issues. So.
Yes, and we've been having some very good conversations with our colleagues about some of these already, so we believe that there are some amendments that we'll be able to bring back that will be very fruitful. There were some other perhaps less controversial edits in this bill. You'll note there was a Section 1, there was a statement of the Oregon Education Investment Board shall administer the network, and it was really supporting the network but coordinating it around the Mentor Teacher Act and the activities around recruiting culturally diverse teachers. We still work very closely with the Oregon Department of Education that administers the actual strategic investment funds. So that was a word area there. And another important thing that we believe this bill does is it amends something that was not taken into full consideration during the last legislative session, and that was around the eligible recipients for strategic investments. And so currently, education schools, service districts, and the Oregon tribes, although having capacity and very much interest and expertise in delivering many of the programs and services under the network, they were not eligible to be the main coordinators and recipients of those funds. So this amendment would allow that to occur. In addition to that, as was already referenced, the School District Collaboration Grant Program, which was actually established by the legislature in 2011 under Senate Bill 252, has had a long history now of very successful implementation and notable progress for student outcomes that aligns with the ideas around creating more effective ways for educators to collaborate, to provide career pathways, compensation models, and effective professional development for educators. But currently, the nonprofit agencies are not in the position to administer this program, and so this is an amendment that would occur that for that to happen under this particular project. We feel as though the history and the performance and the evidence of outcomes strongly supports the fact that they have very clearly understood how to coordinate this program and provide great outcomes. What was already mentioned was the mentoring hours in the mentoring program, and we are working through some areas there. I think the sum of the rationale was simply going back to the fact that we all know that specifying a specific number may or may not affect the quality of what's delivered, and there is a limited research base that points to 90 as the magical hour, or you know, the magical number. We did feel very positive that the work done by the mentoring advisory groups this year in establishing standards for the mentoring program here was really the attempt necessary to avoid any slippage in the level of quality that we have in a program. And so I think the initial thinking was that now that we have fully supported and state board approved standards for the mentoring program, we may not need the specificity of the number of hours. I will share that we've taken testimony from folks that have shared concerns about whether or not every teacher needs 90 hours of contact, whether or not there's a difference between a teacher who's new to the district versus somebody who's new to the profession. Teachers that perhaps are in their second year and doing beautifully and making all kinds of progress versus some teachers who are going to need perhaps a lot more than 90 hours. And then there was also discussion about whether or not administrators have that same need for the 90 hours of contact when perhaps some of them are actually engaged in some long-term professional development with other administrators and getting that support. Other kinds of amendments in this particular bill, there were references to several investments that were made during the 2013-15 biennium that will have been achieved by July 1st, 2015. You'll be hearing reports on those, probably interim reports now and later in the session as they conclude with findings and results. And also we had a couple that were moved from one entity to another. So I would draw your attention to the fact that we've established proficiency teaching demonstration sites now in five areas of the state, and we've created a bank of resources, including curriculum materials, grading supports, the kinds of communication references that teachers need in order to implement proficiency in their communities. That has already been created. We also have been providing technical assistance to the districts around the creation of college career readiness assessments, particularly performance-based assessments, and there will be, by the end of this biennium, a bank of items that have been developed by teachers in Oregon, that have been tested by teachers in Oregon, and that are accessible for teachers in Oregon. We also will have completed some organizational assessments around district elements of their professional development and strategic plans. Those were carried out, or actually finishing up, in four districts: Beaverton, Gresham, Barlow, Rainier, and Sherwood. And two items have been shifted slightly. The TEL survey, which was administered for the first time last spring and had a strong support of response, will continue in 2016. It will, however, be the responsibility of the OEIB to carry that out. And the early learning scholarships, which I'm real pleased to say have benefited 282 teachers, those have been moved over to the early learning division budget. And I think it's an example of where things have been able to be leveraged, because they were able to use other federal dollars to leverage those scholarships, particularly to attract a more culturally and linguistically diverse workforce in that early learning age group. And as Lindsay mentioned, we are currently working with stakeholders on these any additional changes to these amendments, and look forward to bringing you back strong amendments.
Any questions for these witnesses? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes,
just one thing,
Senator Cruz.
One of the things on mentoring, I've always thought that we have not done maybe as good a job as we could have of getting retired teachers back into the mentoring program. I mean, that is such a wonderful and valuable asset. It would be a shame if we didn't, you know, try to do more reaching out to retired teachers and getting them back in the classroom for those short periods of time.
Chair Roblin and Senator Cruz, I appreciate that feedback. I will also say that we, it's an interesting variable around looking at the market and what our needs are going to be for new teachers, as we're already seeing promising signs of job market improving for next year. And even this biennium, we weren't able to serve all of the new teachers and administrators that would have been qualified to receive those funds. So we believe it's such an important start to helping every educator succeed, and administrator too, so teacher and administrator. Thank you.
Thank you both. And we have a group of people who want to testify. And before I do that, I do like to mention each session. If there are people who are more than 100 miles away, we usually give them preference. So if you're in any of the committees, that's pretty much true of all of our committees, to make sure if we run out of time that they get to go a little bit early so they can make their trek back. Didn't have any in this group, but I thought I'd mention it just so we keep it on the record. So Jim Abbott, Larry Sullivan, and Gary Peterson, why don't you all come up, and we'll start with that group. And we get to see you, Jim, in a different role than I'm used to. I mean, you've been in it for a while, but it's still.
That's right. I was going to say, I confess I've been here a time or two.
Look familiar.
That's right. It's on the post office wall. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Abbott. I am the executive director of the Oregon Association of Education Service Districts, and have two colleagues here with me. They'll introduce themselves in a second, but we are here to lend support to the bill. With a couple of parameters, I might add, and my two colleagues will address those. Having the ESDs have the opportunity to regionalize initiatives for our school districts is a big deal, and one that was missing in the last legislation. To no one's fault, it's just kind of, it's been a historical that you talk about school districts and schools, and people think ESDs might be included. But when it comes down to writing the rules for the statutes, it turns out that ESDs, in most cases, we're not allowed to do that. So this is a good fix for that, and it'll help all of our school districts, primarily our medium and small school districts. So we appreciate that. As far as the mentor grants, they've been very, very powerful, but we think that with the 90-hour requirement, it limits not only mentors but mentees, and we don't want to do that. We think there's some flexibility that can be made there. That's the extent of my comments. I'd rather have you hear from two ESD superintendents who are working with these issues every day. We will start with Larry. He'll introduce himself, and then we'll go to Gary.
Senator Roblin and committee members, thank you for having me here today. My name is Larry Sullivan. I'm the superintendent of Lane Education Service District. I'd like to make some comments regarding two features of the bill. First, in regards to ESD funding eligibility. Lane ESD serves 16 districts in Lane County. Although we have several larger districts, we have five districts under 300 students and another five districts under or around 1,000 students. Our districts look to us to develop and apply for grants as a consortium. We were very successful in applying and receiving strategic initiative and other grant funding this year, eight grants totaling over $2 million when we were able to apply. In several cases where we were not eligible to apply, for example, the Closing the Achievement Gap grant for African American students, the community nonprofit partner did not have the capacity to apply for or manage this grant. We eventually went to the Lane Education Foundation, which serves Lane ESD in eight small districts in our county. This required additional or unnecessary steps to apply and manage, but we did receive the grant. In one other case, a large district sought support for grant writing and coordination from Lane ESD for the American Indian Alaskan Native Pedagogy grant. The district was successful in receiving the grant, which is working to provide professional development to improve culturally responsive pedagogy and instruction of our teachers for our teachers in Lane County and share those practices across Oregon. On behalf of the districts in Lane County and the ESDs, we support the amended language that allows ESDs to be eligible to receive funding. ESDs play an essential role in implementing initiatives that support districts and improve instruction across Oregon. And my quick other thing. Second, in regards to the time requirement for beginning an administrator mentorship programs, the 11 superintendents and staff representing the Connected Lane Mentoring Grant support the elimination of the 90-hour requirement and the change to must provide frequent contact. I'll give you some context then. We have learned that the mentor-mentee experience is not about an hourly minimum. Rather, our data demonstrates the need for differentiated, high-quality, ongoing, and frequent mentoring support for new professionals. For example, we found that first-year teachers require intensive and targeted support and coaching, often around classroom management and time management, how to plan for instruction, and how to expand their instructional strategies to meet the needs of each and every student. Our mentee pairs average 50 to 60 hours of face-to-face time, independent of the 90 hour, you know, and they also spend 20 to 40 hours of collegial time together, professional development, observation times. Whereas we need to be able to differentiate the mentoring support for second-year teachers. Often these teachers need to dig deeper into instructional strategies and content, and they truly benefit from ongoing professional development and opportunities to collaborate with other teachers and their mentors. This may mean less frequent contact or face-to-face contact or different contact than the first-year teachers. even in our second-year teachers, we average 20 to 40 hours of face-to-face time and more collegial time, professional development, observational time. I just, I'll end with the, I would like to share several responses to our mid-year survey for beginning teachers. We have 105 teachers in our mentor grant this year, and then 12 administrators. 89% of the teachers found time with their mentor to be very or mostly useful. 63% of the teachers said that the program very much impacted their instructional skills. And 94% of the teachers and administrators said the program very much or somewhat impacted their sense of success. Measures of efficacy are often correlated with not only professional success, but retention. And just one really quick thing. Finally, I'd like to share voices from our mentor program, our mentees. To paraphrase many mentees, I can't imagine going through the year without his or her support. One beginning teacher wrote, "My mentor teacher has been a significant source of support through my first year of teaching. I value her ideas, opinions, her classroom teaching. I appreciate her helping me learn school routines and our informal chats throughout the day. We have been able to co-plan lessons and curriculum together, and she has helped better my classroom management. I feel comfortable coming to her for anything, and she makes me feel as though I am a colleague and not a first-year teacher mentee." Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for your time this afternoon. I'm Gary Peterson, superintendent of the Columbia Gorge Education Service District. We're headquartered in the Dalles. We serve Hood River and Wasco counties. I also serve this year as president of the Oregon Association of ESD's Education Service Districts. I too would like to speak in favor of adding the language regarding education service districts into the bill and cite a specific example that came out of the OEIB initiatives from 2013. As Mr. Mabbitt alluded to, there was education service districts were not specifically identified in many cases as being eligible to make application for those grants. And by virtue of that, we were on the sidelines in many cases as those funds were awarded. In our region, the Hood River County School District, for example, very proactively acting on their own initiative and with the use of a professional grant writer, was able to receive nearly $750,000 in grants awarded for the 2013 OEIB initiatives. This is a significant accomplishment for a district of their size. In contrast, the three Wasco County districts, which have just a slightly smaller number of total enrollment, acting independently and without outside support, were only able to collectively access less than $50,000. The net result of that was to further exacerbate the difference between what was going on in programming in Hood River County and what was going on within the Wasco County schools. Had our ESD been able to create a consortium of those districts and move forward, we believe we would have been able to effectively access more of those funds for the Wasco County districts, which certainly have that need. I'd like to take that just a step further in terms of the language allowing education service districts to be involved in various initiatives. Earlier, you heard some testimony around Senate Bill 217, and in that bill, there's language that the OEIB shall make strategic investments to promote collaboration and alignment among early childhood service providers, school districts, community colleges, public universities, and employers. Columbia Gorge ESD is a significant early childhood provider in Wasco County. We run three different preschool classrooms as well as providing home services for special needs children, and we serve a population of over 150 children and families. And the inclusion of education service districts on the list of potential collaborators would ensure that we have a place at the table for such discussions as they move forward. On the second point of in support of the deletion of the requirement for minimum 90 hours of contact time between the mentor and beginning teacher administrator, we would also support that. I have a recent example as of fresh as this week. One of our districts has a new science teacher coming in mid-year to replace a vacancy. This is a teacher who would certainly benefit. I think it happens to be a brand new teacher would certainly benefit from a mentor at this point in time in their career. But by virtue of coming in at this point in the year, it becomes problematic with the 90-hour of contact time for them between a mentor and the teacher. And so they, in our interpretation of the current way it would work, would not qualify for a mentor for this the rest of this year. So our request would be for some flexibility. 90 is 90, and if there are ways around that to make it look to be more flexible for the needs of the teachers, for the needs of the districts. And one of the points that Senator Cruz made relative to bringing in retirees to act as mentors, that's actually what we are doing. The bulk of our mentors in our region now are retirees. That's both a plus and a minus in terms of those folks sometimes are in high demand and spread pretty thin. But secondly, there may be a cases where you want someone who's a little fresher to the trade, so to speak, to act as a mentor, someone in the 3 to 5 year range who has more recent experience and has working through some of the more current initiatives. And so we would just encourage some flexibility in whatever language you come up with. But for us, we don't believe that a hard, fast 90 is the way to go. Thank you.
Any questions for any of these? I do want to say, since Senator Cruz isn't here, I appreciate the fact that we are using retired teachers. And I agree with you completely. There are times when having people in the building are also really important, because a lot of the new teachers don't understand even what the local issues are. And if you have someone that's not in the school understanding what's going on in the school, it's hard for them to answer those kinds of questions. So there is a need for a combination of things, so I appreciate that. Yes.
And Robin, can I add to that?
Please.
One of the things that I think our mentor program, and we do use retired teachers, but our districts really value teacher leadership. And to have classroom-based teachers mentor other new teachers is really important to us. It's not only a professional development for new teachers; it's also teacher leadership for established teachers.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point to make, because we are always looking for opportunities to help our teachers become better teachers, and leadership is one of those skills. So, any other questions or comments for this group? Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Next, we're going to have Frank Capello and Jared Mason Greer and Joel Fisher. Thank you. And whoever wants to start, we can do it in that same order. So, Frank, you want to start? That'd be great.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Frank Carapello, and I am the Vice President of Education Policy for the Chalkboard Project. Before joining the Chalkboard Project in July of this past year, I served as a teacher, a principal, and assistant superintendent in the North Santiam and Albany school districts. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate Bill 216, particularly the section that would allow the ODE to contract with a nonprofit organization to administer the School District Collaboration Fund. In 2011, the legislature created the Collaboration Fund, a state-funded version of the CLASS project, which Chalkboard launched in 2008. Since 2008, Chalkboard has been implementing the CLASS project in districts across Oregon. We've also been managing a $25 million Teacher Incentive Fund federal grant, and have served as the technical assistance provider for districts and the ODE for the state-funded collaboration fund this last biennium. To date, we've worked with almost 40% of the teachers and students in Oregon. We know that teachers are the single most important school factor in a student's success, and the student outcomes from the collaboration districts bears this out. Collaboration grants allow districts and teachers to voice and recreate their profession in ways that we believe benefits both teachers and students. Students participating in the districts that are part of our collaboration and CLASS districts are achieving proficiency at higher rates. They're closing achievement gaps quicker, and graduation rates are higher on average than in non-participating districts. One way to sum it up, if all of the districts in Oregon were achieving the same results as the participating districts, Oregon would be in the top 10 of states in both eighth grade reading and math. The ODE has had a yeoman's job of implementing over the past few years a multitude of new projects and programs, including the Collaboration Fund. With no one in the department having participated on the ground in this work, it has been an uphill climb for them and a steep learning curve. We believe it would benefit both the ODE and the participating districts if a nonprofit like Chalkboard were able to administer the program in the upcoming biennium. We could utilize our expertise developed over the past 7 years of implementing this program, and it would allow the ODE to free up resources and capacity to address critical areas where no public-private partnership is available. This is an opportunity to leverage a private-public partnership to further improve a program that is significantly improving student learning outcomes. However, any nonprofit, including ourselves, that is tapped to do this work needs to be held to a high standard. Our board of directors requires an annual audit of our work, and our federal grant requires rigorous federal auditing, neither of which has had any findings. We also contract with third parties to analyze student data and evaluate our work to ensure that we have an objective lens. Before I move on to other sections of the bill, I want to call your attention to a letter signed by superintendents. I believe you have it at your places, from current Collaboration Fund districts. They support a nonprofit like Chalkboard as the administrator and call on us to work with ODE to ensure the program can meet the growing demand for years to come. Senate Bill 216 also includes language that creates a new opportunity within the Collaboration Fund for participating districts who voluntarily agree to do further innovation and explore further innovative practices, and we provide a few extra dollars for them to do so. We look forward to to working with the OEIB and the ODE and our stakeholders to further refine that section of the bill. Finally, we do have some concerns around the bill's attempt to revise the Oregon Beginning Teacher and Mentor program hours. The program we know is critical to the success of new teachers, and we support maintaining the minimum number of hours in statute. Knowing that we will be able to work with OEIB to resolve some of these pending issues, we do support Senate Bill 216 and ask for your support. Thank you, and I will look forward to questions at the end.
Thank you. Next, let's go with Jared Mason Greer. I haven't seen you in front of the committee very often.
No, this is day 14 in my new role. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Jared Mason Greer with the Oregon Education Association. You're participants in my first real opportunity to royally screw anything up, and I'm going to try not to do that today. The OEA is largely neutral on SB 216. We did want to voice, however, for the record, our significant concerns to Section 4 in the bill, which removes the 90-hour requirement for beginning teacher mentorships. I think it's pretty broadly understood the benefit that program has. We're committed, if there's an offline conversation that needs to be had to improve flexibility, we'd be happy to participate in that, but would prefer to see Section 4 removed so that that program continues as is. Thank you.
And so Joel.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher. I'm senior policy analyst at the Oregon Business Association. I'm still not actually senior to anybody there. So I'll just kick off with our support for the Oregon Mentor Program. A lot of people might screw up OEA and OBA, so at least you can remember that we're both hand in hand on this one. We're strong supporters of the Oregon Mentor Program and support keeping the 90-hour minimum. We believe strongly in the Network for Teacher Quality and Learning. It's a critical component for an effective and supported educator workforce. We're a strong supporter of the School District Collaboration Fund, which is funded through the network. Districts that participate in the school fund are seeing incredible results, significant impacts on student achievement that are outpacing the rest of the state. And we support the opportunity in this bill for a nonprofit like Chalkboard to administer the program. Thanks.
Any questions for this group? Mm-hmm. So, Jared, are you okay with 90? Did you think 180 hours? Was there an issue with regard to the number of 90? Should it be greater or less?
We support the 90-hour requirement.
Is there a reason why 90 was better than some other number?
No, we just don't believe that there's a reason to amend that language.
Okay, just wanted to check. Yes, do you have a question?
It was my football number in high school.
Okay.
Chair Roble, yes. If I may, 90 hours over the course of a school year, as you know, 40 weeks in a year, it's about 2 hours a week, roughly,
okay.
Which I believe makes sense.
Okay. Thank you that very much. Thank you, Jared. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to Senate Bill 216? Okay. Then I want to really commend the OEIB staff who have been working on this, because they are looking to find consensus out there, and they actually came to me a while before after we posted it and said, we've still got some work to do, and we want to make sure that we get this right this time. So hopefully some of this testimony helps, and I can see you do have some people on opposite sides of these issues, so you have some work cut out ahead of you. So
that's amazing that you would have people on different sides.
Isn't that amazing? I agree. So anyway, so we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 216, and as you can tell, they have some work to do, so we aren't going to be having a work session on that today. So next, we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 215. And before we call people up and before we have the explanation, depending on the bills and how many people out there have comments, there's a lot of times we get public testimony in the form of emails and others. And just so people know, we have on this particular bill had a number of emails. And so on OLIS, there is a place that will be associated with this bill which will have all of that testimony. And we will be looking at that as well as public testimony. I want to make sure that on the record people know that we do have the system that collects that material that is submitted to the committee, and it is available for anybody in the public to observe and look at by going to the OLIS system, and you can check that out. And there are more than a few there already. We anticipate there may be more as time goes on, but just want to make sure that that is part of the public record once it is sent in and sent to our committee administrator, who gets that posted. With that, we'll have a short explanation of this bill from our administrator, Gretchen.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 215 removes the sunset on the Oregon Education Investment Board and Chief Education Officer, declares an emergency effective on passage. At this time, there is no revenue impact. It may have a fiscal impact, but the statement has not yet been issued. We're not considering any amendments at this time.
Very good. So with that, we'll call up Lindsay Capps, Lindsay, and Dr. Nancy Golden.
Afternoon. For the record, I'm Nancy Golden, the Chief Education Officer. Senator Roblin, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to talk to you about the importance of the OEIB today. I'm going to begin with another story. I always do that because this is about kids, and I believe deeply that the OEIB has and is making a profound difference on behalf of the students. So I was in a kindergarten class, saw a little boy who was drawing a stick figure. So, you know, when they draw stick figures, you got to try to figure out who that stick figure is. So I leaned down and said, who is that? And they said, my dad. So I sat next to him and drew a figure of my dad. It was about as good as the stick figure, to be honest with you. But the little boy said, who's that? And I'm going to call him Jonathan. And I said, that's my dad. And he said, how old is he? And I said, well, he's 92 years old. And he said, what grade is he in? So it's all about grades for those students, right? And it's all about passing from one to the next. And fundamentally, that's what the Oregon Education Investment Board is going to do, is ensure that our students move in a seamless way from birth through college and career. So the OEIB is made up of 13 board members who are charged with setting goals and identifying strategies to provide a seamless pathway of learning for each and every student. This was passed by a bipartisan supermajority of the legislators to ensure that by 2025, every student graduates from high school ready for career or to earn a college degree. We are a nimble and strategic organization, and I think we're uniquely positioned to be sitting back and always looking at what's happening for students from the point of view of the student. So we are a strategy-setting board. We're not a governance board. Our job is to be independent, to stand alone, to be an independent, standalone coordinating agency that really connects the dots for the students. It connects the dots for the little guy I talked about the other day. It connects the dots for the Jonathan I talked about today. And it connects the dots for all children. We've been having some success. We have much more to do, but we have been having some success, and I want to talk about that. We've broken down silos. We've brought together experts from early learning to post-secondary to work together in political in policy development and systems improvement. We've busted barriers, and we're smoothing the way for our students. And because of that, our locals look at the state as being more responsive to their local needs. And again, there's so many examples, but just the idea of making sure we have quality daycare for our students, so when they come to kindergarten, they come ready to learn, is a huge barrier to bust on behalf of these children who need this kind of daycare. The accelerated learning is really going to help make sure all students have college credits in high school. The strategies that we've developed and recommended come from successful models around the state. The money you gave last biennium has incubated amazing ideas, many of which are showing showing promise. And so this time we need to scale these up for all students. We're creating seamless transitions that ensure every child's ready for kindergarten, every child reads proficiently by third grade, and on the other end, that every child graduates high school, obtains a career certificate, or completes college. We strengthen the achievement compacts. What the achievement compacts are a shared leadership model where the state sets targets, those are the outcomes on the achievement compacts, and local communities collaborate around strategies. A lot of this collaboration is happening around the RACs, the Regional Achievement Collaboratives. I could give you examples from many of the RACs, but today I'd like to talk about All Hands Raised in the metropolitan area. All Hands Raised has had what I call laser focus on ninth grade on track. That is an outcome on the achievement compact because we all know how important that is to get the graduation. I've been told that all the districts in their six districts involved in All Hands Raised have improved in ninth grade on track. But what I know, because I talked to Portland today, in 2008, 2009, they had 71% of their students on track at the end of ninth grade, and today they have 83% on track. That's a 13% increase, and that data is from the 13-14 years, so who knows what's happened in the 14-15 years. All Hands Raised are districts and community-based organizations coming together, being really focused on the outcomes, leveraging shared resources, and really making a difference on behalf of kids. We're convening and leveraging collective impact. We have brought all educational agencies and diverse and successful community partners together to really start thinking about how do we meet those outcomes on the achievement compact. The Reading Equity Group is one such example. There were about 40 of us who came together multiple times to think about age 3 to grade 3, and the investment we're suggesting came out of that group, as well as looking at other districts who have been successful along the pathway. So the 40-40-20 goal is a high goal, but I believe every student deserves to have a high goal. I believe it's going to take strong and sustained support on the part of OEIB and on the legislators to achieve this goal. Another thing we've done is we amplified equity. We've elevated best practice for our students in the opportunity gap. We're making sure we're all culturally responsive. We honor cultures. Children see their cultures in their schools, and we're scaling up across the state in the districts who have been early out and really successful in this area. What I believe we're doing is for once and forever, we are going to close the opportunity gap. So there's tons of work ahead. We're at a critical moment in education in Oregon, and I believe this is going to take all hands on deck. It's going to take my hands and your hands and all of us. The opportunity OEIB has created and the successes that are beginning to emerge, they're encouraging, they're inspirational, and they're scalable. It's too important for our students to turn back now. It's too important for the little guy who wants to go to college. It's too important for Jonathan who wants to move through the grades. And it's too important for all students. Our work across the state has just begun, and it's beginning to make a really important difference. So the OEIB is going to continue its efforts to ensure strong agency operations in alignment across all of the agencies from birth and college and career. We're going to lead transformation in a way that makes a difference for the students, for the families, and for community prosperity. The OEIB will continue to listen to multiple perspectives in communities around Oregon. We're going to improve our thinking and approach through research. We're going to be perfecting our decision-making through strong engagement. That's why we are asking the legislators to extend our charge. It is why we're working to better engage Oregonians to bring their skills and assets to the tables. We're asking regions through community-based collaboratives to harmonize strategies beyond education, in order to assure student success along the continuum. We're partnering with leaders across educational institutions to support them and ask to help in developing broader opportunities for learning to make sure all our students are career and college ready. We are supporting teachers and administrators and being cutting edge and being highly qualified, and so that we make sure there is a quality teacher in front of every child and a quality leader leading every one of our school districts. We're also asking our educators to help develop and implement an effective assessment system. We're working side to side with people all over the state that truly informs instruction each and every day. We're asking parents and community-based organizations and culturally specific organizations to partner with schools to ensure every child has the support to be engaged and to remain on track. We're asking industry to partner with our schools and post-secondary institutions to create strong connections between education, our local and state workforce, so our students have jobs and they have them in Oregon. The vision of 40-40-20 is galvanizing. It provides hope. It provides direction for educators, students, parents, and community. The leadership of the OEIB provides the foundation, the opportunities, and the policy drivers to enact the change necessary to reach the 40-40-20 goal for all students, for the little guy, and for Jonathan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Very good. Any questions?
That was the best speech of the day.
Good.
Any questions for Dr. Golden? I see none right now. Thank you very much for being here. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you, Caps. With that, we will invite up it's Rex Hagen and Steve Bush. Buck?
Buell.
Oh, it's L's. I'm sorry.
Before I excuse me, I have a bad cold. Before I start, I have to say it's a pleasure to follow Nancy Golden. I feel a little bit like a principal I once knew who in Montana Evel Knievel was supposed to be the speaker of the student councils, and he didn't show up, so they called this guy to go talk instead, and to say he was underwhelmed his audience, is to put it mildly. I would also say that I congratulate our governor. If he had only left Rudy Crewe in charge, we wouldn't be even holding this. This thing would have died a long time ago. And I think his choice of Nancy was brilliant. I have great respect for Nancy. I just happen to disagree with her on many of the specific things. So my name is Rex Hagens. I live in the Canby School District, one of the founders of Oregon Save Our Schools. I spent 30 years working in education, research, and development, almost all of them directly devoted to leading large-scale change efforts to improve public schools. I've also been a very close follower and critic of the OEIB and have attended most of their meetings, interviewed many of their staff. Based on that background and experience, I'm here today to urge you to reject Senate Bill 215 and let the Oregon Education Investment Board sunset. There are a number of good reasons. I'm going to just talk about three of them. I'm sure Steve will have some others. First and foremost to me is that Oregon's teachers are insulted and angered by the approach of the Oregon Education Investment Board. I think our teachers believe that the educational wisdom of policy analysts, politicians, advocacy groups, and business leaders have been allowed to dominate their own professional and craft knowledge, and even in many ways been sneered at. The governor came very close to that in the last OEIB meeting, by the way. If you've missed it, you shouldn't have. So this is especially evident in the dogged determination of OEIB to continue and even extend the use of the tests, which teachers feel are harming their students. This is hardly a good omen for any kind of change and improvement in our schools. If the teachers aren't with you, good luck. And I think they are not. Secondly, the tone of OEIB's work is eroding public trust. The tone of Nancy's speech speaks to that. She's now changing that tone dramatically. But it doesn't overcome the fact that there is still a good deal of arrogance and impropriety as a continuing aspect of the work of the OEIB, and it's fed by a lack of transparency that has been egregious. A couple of quick examples. In the beginning, there were more secret meetings and closed meetings prior to the creation of the board than I can imagine. I have attended many. We went for a long time without even being able to have 2 minutes of public testimony. There was excessive pressure, and this, I think, is a fatal flaw, for speedy decisions about very complex and controversial issues. That was so we could get it into law before somebody could have a chance to attack it. There's been a consistent reliance on what I consider to be a very small set of experts and failure to seek input from others who might question them. I'm talking about other experts. There are a number of them. I could name them for you in several fields. This reeks of predetermined decision-making and the determination of somebody, I believe is the governor, to push this thing through in spite of any opposition. Parents, teachers, and community members seriously questioning the approach have been virtually excluded from any meaningful input. The lack of attention and spin given to the real messages at the 7 regional forums held around the state just before Nancy came in is real evidence of that. If you want to read a shameful episode in Oregon government, read that. Talk to people that were there. It was awful. Finally, the extremely close match between certain initiatives chosen for competitive funding and existing programs designed or led by members of the board or newly appointed officials in the Oregon Department of Education has not gone unnoticed. There is big money going to programs that's what some of these people have been associated with. I do not imply anything illegal, but I was led to believe the appearance of impropriety is a very bad thing. It exists. Finally, I think, in spite of what Nancy had to say, the OEI's approach to strategic investment is poorly conceived and exerting pressure on restoring solid basic funding for our schools. H. L. Mencken famously said, "For every complex problem, there is an answer that is clear, simple, and wrong." I think that the wrong answer is coming from the OEIB. I have no quarrel with the quality of most of the programs that have been selected for investment, but I've seen absolutely nothing to convince me that OEIB and their staff have adequately addressed or even understand the challenges of going to scale. Nancy spoke of scaling. This is critical. You don't put your money in one place and then have it stay there. After 30 years of working that task, I feel they may well be setting a course for the rocks of disappointment and distrust and disillusionment, not to mention that this course is very likely to bring them back to you in the out years for more and more funding, which may or may not be directly connected to the basic operation of your schools. That could make this current session's little kerfuffle over that a permanent feature of legislating budgets for years to come. Again, I urge you to let the Oregon Education Board ride into the sunset. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I have to follow Evel Knievel here. My name is Steve Buell. I'm a retired 40-year school teacher Like Rex, a founder of Oregon Save Our Schools, and a member of the Portland School Board, for whom I am not speaking today. Since the inception of the Oregon Education Investment Board, I have attended, with a couple exceptions, every one of its meetings, so I believe I have a good sense of how it works as well as its impact on Oregon's education. Maybe I can offer some insights you have not heard. Originally, the OEIB was designed to be a super board, overseeing and supervising the educational spectrum from kindergarten through college. It was to be the board which connected the various silos together. It was charged with reallocating money, called in its vernacular investing, so that the Oregon's children would benefit in the long run. It never had its own budget to spend, as some agencies do. And in practice, it gets its money from raiding other more traditional education entities, such as colleges, community colleges, and school districts. Thus, every time it passed an initiative, some other educational entity was weakened. This remains true today, though some time ago, Governor Kitzhaber remade the OEIB as his own advisory board. They no longer were in charge, but their new charge was to report as an advisor to the governor. In their last budget suggestion to the governor, which he incorporated into his budget request of the legislature, the OEIB repurposed money which would reallocate close to $650 million from schools to community agencies or other groups outside of the school districts. This is, in essence, like cutting approximately 7,000 teachers from schools across the state. In Portland School District, it would mean a cut of nearly 500 teachers, or about 5 per building. This type of approach to education has been consistently followed by the OEIB. Instead of working to improve the schools of Oregon, they have taken money as well as time and energy from schools and given out grant-like gifts to various entities, oftentimes directly connected to the members of the OEIB or the governor himself, with the intent of having a pilot program which, if supposedly successful, will be scaled up statewide. This is not unlike the national disaster surrounding the corporate education reform approach, which makes a good deal of money for some corporations at the expense of our children, which was called Race to the Top federal program. From the very beginning, when the OEIB borrowed a plan from the business community, which was roundly rejected in 16 statewide public meetings, and then they passed the original flawed plan to the Oregon Department of Education almost intact, it has continually refused to reflect on its plan's overall effects on education in Oregon, and instead it has moved ahead with blinders on concerning complaints and conflicting points of view. I just have one more paragraph, but I just wanted to comment on what Rex had said and what Dr. Golden had said. We went, as Oregon Save Our Schools, down to Dr. Golden and said, look, we're concerned about, and we're pretty good organization. We've got, I'm not going to go into it, but we've got really solid credentials around education. And we went down and said, we want to be invited to just make a short presentation to explain to you what some of the effects are going outside of the regular, outside of what you're doing. What are unintended consequences? We've got some. We had about 100, we laid it out. And we were told, no, you can't. No, we won't invite you. Forget it. That's how the openness and the transparency works down there. The legislature should let the OEIB sunset. This would return the decision-making to a non-political approach where the various bodies most closely connected to the schools and the universities would make the decisions which most directly impact them. Thank you for listening.
Any questions? Okay. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Chuck Bennett, Morgan Allen, and Trish Smith.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to just sort of begin what we hope will be a longer discussion of the future of OEIB. I think, as has been alluded to earlier, Nancy Golden is an inspirational and collaborative leader. Rudy Crewe was not. I think that's a truism, but it's one that I think has to be included in the discussion of OEIB. A course was set. by Dr. Crew that I think continues to dog this organization, and one that results in a problem for folks like me who come to you with a very divided community that we represent. The division is not numerical. I think if I were to ask superintendents as a large group, should we keep OEIB or sunset it, right now it would be affirmative for sunset. But there, I think a huge part of it is, number one, a full understanding of where Dr. Golden plans on taking this organization. Another look by the legislature at what I think it can best be described as a real deviation from its original mission, which was to be a coordinating council for the P20 system, and an organization to assist in developing a variety of strategies for dealing with issues inside the system to advance the 40-40-20 goal. So far, this would be probably the easiest way to sum it up. If you put more money in the classroom, you get better results. That's what we think this whole thing has boiled down to at this point. And we would like to understand, I guess, for an organization called the Oregon Education Investment Board, why we are seeing a disinvestment proposed again by the chairman of the board, the governor. So it's hard to bring all of this together and find that it represents, at this point, a coherent direction relative to at least our part of it, K-12 education. And so we hope that between now and the end of session, we can have a really full discussion of the organization, some of the ways it has used school classroom funds to pay for grant-related and directed dollars for programs that are presumably scalable but never scaled. They're just scalable as far as we can tell. They don't seem to come into the system in a meaningful way. And to take a look at the broader question of governance in K-12, this has, if anything, confused the situation in terms of who's in charge, where are we going, how are we going to get there, is it OEIB leading the way, is it the Department of Education, or if you look frankly at the organizational chart, is it resting now singularly in the governor's office? And if that's the governance model, I think we all need to understand what that means for the future and recall, as I mentioned, Dr. Crew and where he began to take us. There's a real concern here, and one that we hope we can spend time with you and the committee and other stakeholders in this system on, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. I'm Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, and like others, I think it's important for us to acknowledge that under Dr. Golden's leadership, our members have noticed and appreciated her collaborative and inclusive approach and her efforts to find consensus and bring stakeholders to work together. But on the underlying question today in regards to the OEIB sunset, our Legislative Policy Committee has actually considered this question of whether or not our organization should support the continuation of the OEIB. And they essentially voted to do so if several conditions were met. And I'll just mention a couple things that our members are looking for as the legislature engages in this discussion. I think the first is certainly, when you look at the membership of the OEIB, we'd like to see the appointment of generally more folks involved in education or education stakeholders. And you've heard me talk about this before. Specifically, we think that there should be a parent representative and a school board representative on the OEIB. Those are important voices in the K-12 system, and they're absent from that board. We've had bills. The House has passed a couple of bills to do that. They've come over here, and we hope to get some of those bills to this committee this session as well. And I think essentially what it boils down to for our members is we want the OEIB, if it goes forward, to really focus on supporting that seamless, that idea of a seamless P20 system. And we, and our members certainly don't want the OEIB to be granted broad new powers or control over the purse strings for districts or schools. So, again, you know, I think for our members, we want you guys to engage in this conversation. We want you to listen to the suggestions. Just a couple, I'll add three more suggestions to the list as you, if you guys are sort of putting together a list of things to talk about. I think, again, looking at that overall P20 governance, the OEIB, when it was created, there was a lot of talk about how this would streamline. There'd be less boards, there'd be less commissions, there'd be less meetings. And I think it's not unfair to say that that goal has yet to be met. The second thing that is you should look at is right now, and I think this was obviously part of how the original bill was constructed, but there are no sideboards on service on the OEIB. Once you're appointed and approved by the Senate, right now you could be on there for as long as you want to be, or as long as the governor chooses to have those members serve. So, for example, the State Board of Education, you're appointed for a four-year term. You can serve 2 4-year terms, and it's not uncommon on many of our boards and commissions to have some sort of length of service or parameter where the legislature gets to revisit the membership, and we think that should be part of the discussion. And again, we want you to review that membership, and we think that the educators and education stakeholders generally are a little bit underrepresented on the board. Obviously, we have interest in seeing a school board member and a parent as part of that discussion. And I think, you know, a lot of people have said to us, well, you do get to come to the meetings, you do get to testify, you do get to have your voice heard. But I think there's a difference between being able to come and testify for 3 minutes or meet with staff people or Dr. Golden individually and actually having a vote. There's a big difference in our opinion. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions and look forward to working with the committee.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA came to the legislature when Senate Bill 909 was introduced and testified in opposition to that bill. We believe that the problems that our members are experiencing in education, in the classroom, in our schools, is a result of decades of defunding. And we don't think creating a new state agency will solve that problem. We have seen the way the OEIB has worked. Others have mentioned some of their earlier problems. As Chuck and Morgan both said, we have great respect for Dr. Golden, and she has worked very hard to try to make improvements at OEIB over what had occurred in the past. However, what we would ask you to do is go back and ask yourselves, what is the purpose? Why do we need another state agency administering education? If the issue is we need to more easily move a child from, for example, Head Start to kindergarten and from high school to college, from middle school to high school, those are very specific issues that should be, we can address, but we should be drilling down on those specific issues. OEIB has addressed a huge spectrum of ideas that have come from their own members and the folks that they listen to, that many of them may be good ideas, but can they be scaled up to 650 school students in K-12? That's our problem. Our fifth graders, not just our third graders, are suffering. Our high school sophomores are suffering. They need quality programs. Our educational assistants who teach the kids in the achievement gap need training, and they're not getting it. If we want our kids to succeed, we need to put resources in schools. I appreciate all of the very smart and dedicated and committed people at the state level who wish our schools could be providing a better education for our kids than they are. Those of us at the local level also agree with that. We wish we could be providing a higher quality education for our kids. We don't think building new state agencies is the solution to that problem. We think it's a revenue issue, and the revenue needs to be in our classrooms, in our schools, in highly trained staff teaching our kids. And so, should you choose to consider Senate Bill 215, we would appreciate a very robust, very thoughtful discussion and go back to the very beginning. Why does it exist? What is it for? And is that appropriate? It's a longer discussion, and we would be happy to participate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Oh, yes. Senator Beyer.
Not a question so much as a comment. Just listening to it, it seems like there's a concern about supervision of the system and funding of the system. No surprise to me, and I completely agree that the biggest problem is there's not enough money. And so we're quibbling over how is the inadequate funding split. And a lot of that has less to do with the OEIB than it does the structure we put together. We still got the education department, and oh, by the way, we made the governor the superintendent of public instruction. Governors have always made a budget recommendation, but regardless, if you did away with the OEIB, the governor is still going to wear one hat or the other, the governor recommending the budget or the governor, superintendent of public education, running the system. And my sense is you have strong disagreements with this governor's philosophy about how education ought to be delivered, either as he espouses that as the superintendent of public instruction or as the governor. So I'm not sure this issue is one of OEIB as much as it is limited resources and the choice that this assembly made to not have an independent superintendent of public instruction, which I never agreed with or voted for.
If I could just comment, Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, with regard to inadequate resources, I suppose if you were funding at $9.2 billion and we were staffed up and trained in our schools, I wouldn't have as much heartburn about peeling off $100 million to put into particular programs to see if they work. But we're peeling off $100 million from an unfunded system, and that directly impacts students. And so we can't really afford to do that.
Follow up, Senator.
Trish, I don't disagree with you where you're coming from. But it strikes me what we're looking at now is, for whatever reason, a system that basically is not serving students very, very well, and whether it's just the underfunding or the way in which we deliver services. And the question is, should we change? Should we try to find something better? If that's part of the answer, the others, it reminds me of the old line of, you know, if you keep doing the same thing, you're going to get the same result.
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I couldn't agree with you more. What's ironic is the same thing has been to cut funding in public education. I would just suggest if that's our strategy, we will not get the kind of successes we hope for. We're 1 year less in the education of a 112 student than the national average. We have some of the largest class sizes in the United States. Start dealing with the fundamentals, I guess, and certainly there are interesting ideas out there. Believe me, in 197 school districts, they are being done. We don't need an OEIB to help us do it, and one that targets its grant money in specific areas or to specific groups or to specific school districts. We need help in the enterprise. The enterprise is underfunded, and it's a, you know, for those of us who work in this area, you get kind of tired of being a one-note presentation, I guess. But until there becomes a real commitment to both sustainable and at least semi-adequate funding, it's hard to believe that trying multiple different and sometimes opposing strategies results in a great outcome if you can't scale them, as was mentioned by Dr. Golden. right now we can't scale this stuff. We just got what we have found out is what we knew. If you put money in the classroom, if you try some interesting ideas, things can work better. Right now, you can have the idea, you just can't bring it into the classroom because you haven't got the money.
So we're sort of there and just tighten up the life jackets and keep bailing.
That's how we feel. Thank you, Senator. I'm glad you appreciate our situation.
Yes. Thank you. I don't disagree. I had someone at a town hall, a school administrator, say, Mark, this was after we created OEIB. It was early on, and said, these reforms are great, what you're doing, these reforms are, but at some point, you have to fund the operation. And I think that's what we're all saying, really.
Different issues.
I don't think that they're mutually exclusive, though. I think we sort of have to be relentless in trying things, new things, and experimenting and dealing with technology and the realities that we live in today. And I don't think it's one or the other.
Chair, I certainly agree, Senator. All I would suggest to you is, we have 197 different ways of doing it, or could, if we had the funding. There's nothing new going on here. I'll just be honest with you. If you read the literature, no surprises coming out of the investments. Nothing real exciting and new that is not being tried in smaller ways with available funds at the local level. And I guess what really, a lot of what OEIB came out of occurred through study work at COSA, through a vision and policy committee that we have. And the original vision was a coordinating commission trying to achieve the P20 goal. And I think that you have to say that early childhood is one of their success stories, to have found a way to get into that system, that looking at 1114 has a real potential to it. And the problem is, at both ends, is the funding. To do early childhood, if you have a kid in high school, be concerned. Yeah. Be concerned, because the money has to move from somewhere, and it will tend to move from the older kids to the younger kids. And if you want to look at college, as you have, Senator, look at that transition from high school to college, you have to look down to those poor middle schoolers who seem to always kind of get missed along the way. And it's really taking a look at how we can serve the entire spectrum of kids, which is what you would expect to come out of the OEIB. And we expect, and part of why we're not saying sunset this thing, we're saying take a look at its message and its goal. Does that make sense?
That's yes.
Okay. I hope so.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, we have our last three speakers, and we're running a little close to time. So Joel Fisher, Betty Reynolds, and Rebecca Roth. And we'll stay a little if we have to without getting kicked out, so give us your shot.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, Oregon Business Association, up here partly because it's just in my oppositional nature to go ahead and be supportive of extending the sunset of the Oregon Education Investment Board. If you recall what the structure of education looked like in this state a couple of years ago, and compare it to today, you know, it is much more streamlined. And I've always kind of wanted to invoke Fred Myers, but we kind of have the one-stop shopping of education in the P20 system. And so Oregon Business Association is supportive of continuing the Oregon Education Investment Board, letting them, you know, they're still kind of new and creating their culture there, and we'd like to see the sunset be extended. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel.
So good afternoon, Chair Roveland and members of the committee. I'm Betty Reynolds. I'm Vice President for Legislation of the Oregon PTA, and I'm speaking on their behalf. I also serve on the board of the Oregon School Boards Association and have the pleasure of serving on two of the Oregon Education Investment Board's advisory committees. And I've attended most of their meetings for over 3 years now. One thing that strikes me is the absolute commitment of the OEIB, education partners such as the Oregon Education Association, Oregon School Boards, Confederation of School Administrators, leaders like you, educators, and parents to kids. We all want the same thing. We want all students to achieve at their highest potential. So Oregon PTA knows that that the research is clear that engaged parents, parents partnering with our wonderful educators, are essential to helping kids achieve. As the largest parent organization in the state, Oregon PTA would like to have a voice in the education policy discussions through a seat at the table, a seat on the Oregon Education Investment Board. We're also hopeful that other important voices like school boards, educators are heard, and that Oregon's education policy focus is on research-based, evidence-based strategies to deliver high-quality education to students. So thank you again to the Oregon Education Investment Board, to you, and to all education partners for your commitment to Oregon's kids.
Thank you.
My name is Rebecca Roth, and I guess I'm here as a parent. I have seven kids, and we use the public schools, and we also homeschooled. When my kids grew up and got married, they married all kids that had gone to public school. All of the kids that they married said, we've never met anybody in our lives with a whole family that's so together. Your kids have their heads screwed on straight. The kids that they married out of the public school system have all kinds of problems. We're dealing with all kinds of problems. One of the things that happens when kids go into the public school setting is that they're exposed to all kinds of people who are not there for the benefit of those kids. They're there to corrupt those kids or use those kids for their own benefit. I went and heard a lady who owned five abortion clinics. Her name, I won't give you right now, but you can ask me if you'd like to. She used to go into the schools. At that time, Planned Parenthood wasn't being invited in. She used to go into the schools. She was looking for access. She wanted kids sexually active so that they could come and access her abortion clinic. When there are people in the community who are being coordinated to come into the schools by groups like this, Planned Parenthood is in the schools. They're teaching our sex ed. This is putting the fox right at the door of the hen house, or in the hen house. Well, our kids deserve to have somebody who, just a minute, I have 3 minutes.
Yeah, but I want you to make sure that you address the one question. This is about one bill, and it's about OEIB, not the whole.
Yeah, and I want to get rid of them. Okay.
And
I want to put the money back in the hands of parents. As a homeschool parent, I got to decide what my kids did and didn't do, and I got to be a wall to the people who want to access my kid, who wanted to access my kids. And who, when you let people like Planned Parenthood and other, like this guy that just got fired for running sex conferences, Dr. Martin Luther King said that we need to judge people on character. Well, we need to be people of character. And the money needs to be back in the hands of parents so that parents can choose where they want to send their kids. All this money, it can be saved if we'll just put the money back in the hands of parents. The Republicans were doing it in Washington, D.C., and kids were coming out of the ghettos and going into private schools. And as soon as Obama and the Democrats got in, they closed that down. And we need to, the parents cried. They had rallies outside of the White House because they liked their kids going to public schools. And all it took was $6,000 in the hands of those parents as a voucher to go to the private schools, and they got to put their kids in. Two of them went to the same school that Barack Obama's kids go to. But then the Democrats closed that down, and those kids were sent back to their ghetto schools. Now, last spring, when the Republicans got back in, the end of the story is that when the Republicans got back in, they fixed that, and they got those kids back in those private schools. Now, I was here last spring, and there was a hearing going on for the Education Committee, and you had bussed in some people. I don't know who it was, but some people had bussed in some kids from the Portland School District, and they were testifying that their white teachers had disciplined them more severely than their white students. And I went to some of those boys later and asked them, have you ever thought, what you and your parents could do in terms of choosing a school where you got to pick your teacher, or even your parents can hire a teacher and have a private school of your own, or your parents can use that to homeschool you. We need to give options to people instead of spending all our money on groups like this that make all our decisions for us and don't give us a voice at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the group? Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you. Before we close the hearing, I do want to say that I will be putting together a work group to have some conversations deeper than we can here. And if you are an organization or a person that would like to be engaged in that, I won't guarantee everybody that sends their name in, but we will select, and you should email or call Gretchen Embring, our committee administrator, to be on that list, and we will be looking forward to it. We'll talk to some members on this committee if they want to be engaged in that, and then we'll get back to everybody and let people know that we're actually going to have that deeper conversation for a while, and then we will bring this bill back at a future date. Suggestions that may come out of that, amendments and all that stuff, we'll be looking forward to that. So with that, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill. Well, before I say that, I'm going to say one other thing. Everybody else got to ask some questions and say something, and mine has, and I've told that to my teachers when they would complain about a new regulation that was coming from the federal government with respect to students who were with disabilities, or when it came to another thing. And I kept saying, well, you know, the reason that that's happening is us, because we have a responsibility to every student that walks into the building. And when they go and look a big group and they say, what's happening with all the students in all of our schools, they found real discrepancies. And the equity issue that we've talked about is very clear when you look at a large group of people. We weren't doing the job that we all said we were going to do. And I want to make sure that we keep that out there, that we have a responsibility to teach every single child that comes to us and give them the opportunity to do something afterwards. And I think every time we put in a new organization, there's a lot of us thinking, this is the one that's going to do that for us. And the reality is, what was said earlier, what's really going to do it is have the best trained teachers and people in the classroom who understand how to teach all those kids. So hopefully we can have that conversation as part of it as well. And with that, I will close the hearing on Senate Bill 215. And I don't see any more stuff, anything to come towards the committee. So we will end our education committee today. So thank you very much for being here. Thank you. We've got a son. Thank you. We've got a son.